Welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, librarian Laura Zaro-Kopinski, and today we have a special episode with Writing Park partners Jessica Kusad-Edding and Alyssa Embry-Schwartz, authors of the new young adult novel Fade Into the Bright, which is about two sisters, one summer, and a diagnosis that changes everything. Alyssa from Virginia Beach and Jessica, a Los Angeles native, met at the University of Southern California and became best friends after meeting on the first day of school freshman year. After graduating and moving in together, they began a career in television writing. And following a lifelong passion for literature and fiction, Jessica and Alyssa branched into the world of young adult fiction several years ago with the Georgetown Academy series, The Lost Causes, and their latest, Fade Into the Bright, which we'll be chatting about today. Jessica and Alyssa, thanks for coming on A Bookish Home.
Thank you for
thanks
having
for
us.
Having us.
Yes, well, I was mentioning before we started recording, I really loved this book. It was the kind where I was really looking forward to at the end of the day getting to kind of crawl into bed and read, and it also just stole my heart and broke my heart at so many times, and then I was very sad when it was over. And I hope listeners check out too. I think it has such a beautiful cover. So yeah, I'm just really excited to get to hear more about it and about your writing partnership, which I have lots of questions about. First, can you just tell us a bit about this new young adult book?
Fade Into the Bright is a YA contemporary fiction about two sisters, one summer, and a diagnosis that changes everything. And our main character, Abby, is 18 years old. She's going through life as, you know, a kind of typical high school graduated senior, thinking she's just going to go start college the next year, when she receives a letter from her father, who she's estranged from, that he has the gene for Huntington's disease, and she and her sister each have a 50% chance of inheriting it. And so the two sisters decide to undergo genetic testing to see if they're, you know, either of them have the gene and thus will have the disease in their future. And so when Abby discovers the results, she escapes to the island of Catalina to basically figure out where to go from here, how to live, how to love, how do these results change things, and in what ways do they change nothing at all. And it was based on something that was pretty close to home for the two of us. And so it's super, you know, exciting to be kind of opening up this story and this world to lots of readers.
Yes. And I love the way it handles sort of wrestling with those big questions. It definitely kept me just thinking about it long after I would put it down. Mm-hmm. Because it's so true. How do you, in the face of some of this, and I don't want to give too many things away, but those questions about, yeah, how do you live? What do these things change? How do you love? It's so interesting.
I think it's interesting too, because with Huntington's disease, you know, they're not discovering, okay, I'm sick right now. I have this illness and I have so-and-so amount of time to live, or this is going to be happening to me in the next 6 months. You're finding out that you have the gene for a disease that, you know, may hit you in 10 years or 20 years. And so, or even longer than that. And so it's interesting, as genetic testing for other diseases is becoming more, you know, available, and I'm sure will continue to be, to kind of ask ourselves that question of how much do we want to know? And then how does that knowledge really impact, like, how we live and the choices we make?
Those conversations really dominated for the two of us. I think we learned more about each other's very existential feelings than we even knew about each other thus far.
Yeah. Well, and it made me wonder too, because, you know, I definitely hadn't thought before about the process you would go through, and the characters undergo this extensive counseling over, I think it's a year, and then they decide if they want to know the results. And, you know, I'm sure this took some research, of course. And then did you maybe interview people who had gone through similar experiences, just to kind of be getting the perspective? I know I won't give away which sibling, but one of the siblings, you know, is struggling with being Well, I guess it's so hard to not give things away, but is struggling with what is revealed. And, you know, that perspective, I think, would be so challenging, too. So I guess sort of what was that research process like?
Well, we actually, the whole idea of the book started because a cousin of Jessica's, his wife discovered that she had the Huntington's gene in her family. And so as we watched them go through the process, we had been talking about it so much just out of concern. And that was just really the inspiration for the book. And through them, we also met a lot of families in the HD community who were incredibly helpful, sharing their journeys, those affected by, with the gene and the caregivers, everybody. It was truly amazing how they opened up for us.
Have you had readers reach out? I would just imagine, I always think it's so powerful for everyone, but young people in particular, to sort of get to see their experiences mirrored and see a character deal with their same struggles. Mm-hmm. Have you heard from readers about sort of the impact of the book on their lives?
I think it definitely, like, it's so great to see, you know, any reader pick up the book, and it's great to see people who didn't know about Huntington's disease pick up the book and say, wow, I didn't even know about this disease. And now I care and I want to know more and how can I help? But it's super special when someone from within the community reads the book and says to us, wow, like, you got it right. Or this reminds me of my sister, or this is, you know, similar to things that happened within my family or conversations we had. And so, you know, we, like Alyssa said, we did put a lot of time and research into the book. So it feels good to us when, you know, we were really hoping to relay kind of an organic story within this world. So when people who are in this world say that it feels like that to them, it definitely, it's great. And it's all we hoped for during the writing process.
And the conversations we see people having, even on Instagram, when they tag us and we read the conversations that the book is starting, and that is really incredible and inspiring as well. They've just, you know, bringing up very personal things and supporting each other. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. That's so lovely. And I feel like, you know, woven within is a really beautiful love story that I know I really enjoyed reading about. And I think you explore the different family relationships so well. And yeah, it's just really, I loved this one. I'm going to be putting this into people's hands to read.
So
I've been
nice.
Talking it up with friends, and just because those questions kept being on my mind. Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating. Well, I know that listeners are going to be interested in your writing partnership and process, which I definitely am too. And I know I was able to share a little bit about the backstory, but I'd kind of just love to hear from you how your sort of co-writing journey got started and how it's evolved over time.
Yes.
Well,
we've been writing as a team for about 18 years in TV, film, and books. So we just have a very, very well-honed system that we now use. We do all the brainstorming together always. We love to talk about the characters. Like, that's just going back and forth constantly as mm-hmm. we let the story unfold. And we do that together. Now we do that on FaceTime because I live in Bethesda, Maryland, and Jessica's in Los Angeles.
That was something we got started. We were like trendsetters. We did that before everyone was going on FaceTime.
There you go.
Pandemic. We already were working like that most days.
The pandemic's effect on our work life was nil. We have a shared Google Doc that's the outline, and it really would make no sense to anybody else. It's incredibly detailed to us, but we have shorthand for our shorthand at this point. So it really flows for us. And we always leave the last few chapters loose in the outline. We never know exactly what characters are going to pop, what storylines are going to pop. And then once we're done with that, we split up the chapters and swap and edit and swap and edit over and over to the point where we don't even know who's written what.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah. It's seems like it's like this complicated process, but we've been doing it for so long and it just makes so much sense to us. And then the best part is sometimes we'll just put little things in our chapters to make the other one laugh. Or,
I love that. Well,
all of our characters inevitably end up with nicknames that we give them.
Well, you know, it made me kind of start thinking, I feel like in the book world, it's less common, but coming from the TV world, not that I feel like I sort of have a little bit of a, just from listening to like other podcasts, I love the Happier podcast, and she talks, her Gretchen Rubin's sister, Elizabeth, is a TV writer.
I love them.
Yes. That's, and I know she, I only know from that podcast that she has a writing partner that she's had forever, but that it seems like much more common in the TV world, and maybe because like all the scripts are collaborative and stuff. Do you think that influenced kind of how you got started, because the TV and like screenwriting world is more collaborative?
Yeah, I think that was helpful. And I think you're right. In screenwriting, it's not so rare. So it was something that just kind of came about naturally. And then for years, we only did screenwriting. And that's probably where we really honed our process. And screenwriting is a lot about like getting on a shared page with a treatment and then an outline and then writing the script. And we kind of took that process and applied it when we decided to write our first book series as well.
But we also, I mean, we started when we were 22, we wrote our very first thing. So we were also living together and basically doing everything together. So it obviously made sense to us to write this first thing together. And it just worked out since we lived together anyway.
Very cool. Well, you know, I know that there are some writing partnerships where they're, not that they're not friendly, but they're maybe just sort of purely professional business. Writing partnerships. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just business. And being best friends too, how has that sort of affected your partnership? I would imagine there's ways, of course, it makes it better than maybe some ways it makes it challenging. I'm just curious about that.
It's the best. We love it. I think when we were younger and hadn't been doing it together as long, and like Alyssa said, we were, you know, living together too and doing everything together, there were probably more challenges at that point. But, you know, now that we've been doing it for so long, on the work front, those kind of things don't really seep into our friendship. Like if Alyssa thinks the character should go one way and I think the character should go another way, we know we'll come to it eventually. And we know if something's like bothering the other person about something, like that, they're probably right. Even if it didn't bother me, if it's bothering Alyssa, it's not perfect and we should talk about it. And so I think because of that, the work doesn't affect the friendship, but the friendship does affect the work in the best way, which is that we bounce ideas off of each other. We have this like shared brain of all of our past experiences and conversations. We get
it's also great now that
at the beginning of our writing sessions.
But it's also great now that we don't live near each other because we can, every single day we catch up, which is pretty amazing because I know it's so hard to find time to catch up with your friends, especially if they live across the country. So for us, it's just win-win.
Yes. So your coworker is your best friend, and that's very fun. You talked a little bit about sort of outlining and passing chapters back and forth. Is there a part of the process that is, or even maybe specifically for Fade Into the Bright, a part of the process that you enjoyed the most or had kind of the most fun doing?
I would think that it was twofold for us. We loved the relationship with Brooke and Abby. The sisters, any scenes writing the sisters was always really, really great in getting deeper and deeper into the relationship as we kept writing and so many more things kept coming alive. That was always really, really enjoyable.
I was going to say, yeah, like we always start with character. That's our favorite thing. And so particularly in Fade Into the Bright, yes, Brooke and Abby, but then it was also really fun developing the Ben and Abby romance and all of those conversations, I think just started to kind of take on a new life the more we went on with it. And we started to just love the two of them and love him. So it was always like fun when it was like a day to do a Ben and Abby conversation, or if I knew I was going to be getting one from Alyssa, I'd be really excited to read it.
Yes. Ditto.
Oh, that's very fun. You kind of get to be the author and the reader at the
exactly.
same time.
Oh, there are nice. So many times that I can't wait to get Jessica's chapter in. I can't wait to see how she wrote a certain thing. It's so fun. Yeah.
I love that. I was reading, maybe it was on your website or could have been an interview, that you are also or were also growing up big Babysitter's Club fans, which I was as well, and had everyone. Yeah. And I did the very cool thing of convincing people to help me record audiobooks of them in the library, because of course that's what you do with your spare time.
That is hilarious. Wow. That is wonderful.
But I'm just curious sort of what role books played for you growing up, and if there's other authors or titles that really stick out as having, you know, made you readers and writers.
Yeah. We're both huge readers from a very young age, and we're writing our own little books in like first, second, third grade. But that Babysitter's Club was huge because it was this book from these multiple perspectives. There was just something that was so great about each character. You just really got invested. And I know that definitely had a big effect on both of us.
Yeah. And I know it was funny when we first had our first conversation in college, Babysitter's Club came up in that first conversation.
Oh, I love it.
And we were like, had grown up on these opposite coasts, but reading the same books. And then it just sparked into a conversation of, well, who else do you like? What else do you read? And we kind of recognized kindred spirits immediately from that moment. Some of the other books that we both loved when we were growing up, so it was Babysitter's Club, and we also loved Sweet Valley High, our Sweet Valley Twins, which was, again, the relationship between two sisters. And
we also loved the kind of mystery thrillers. We loved Lois Lowry. We read all the Christopher Pike books.
And Lois Duncan. Definitely the ones that were kind of like went a little darker. That was like really exciting to us.
We've always been into the like mystery and then contemporary fiction. And that definitely was what we read.
And interesting how and then your reading taste ends up influencing your writing taste. And that makes me wonder too. So now do you, I guess particularly while you're writing and drafting, do you have to read something very different from what you're writing, or kind of what's your reading life like now?
I try when we're in the middle of writing, I try to read something that I know will inspire me somehow with the book. But nothing, I don't want to be too distracted from it because I kind of like to live in that world a little bit. But the minute we turn in the book, I want to read like three books that have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And just let myself, just relax.
Yeah. While we're writing, I have to be reading. I have to read every night when we're writing. Something like when we're drafting, because I think it just helps. It can be similar. It can be something different. It's always surprising when you will be reading a book that's actually totally different than what you're writing, but it gives you of like, oh, we could do this with that character, if this and this, and it just sparks things. But then Alyssa is right. Once we're done, then I tend to go read something opposite of what we've just read. Just to get myself out of that world a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. It would feel like, I'm sure, dipping into these different worlds, dipping in and out.
Well, we liked Anne. We both read Bird by Bird. Well, I think while we were by Anne Lamott, while we were writing this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I with your TV background and just the way this book unfolds, I kept thinking, you know, how great this would be as a movie or as a series. Is there any talk of an adaptation? And also, I'm very curious on, especially with your TV background, like who you would cast in these roles.
Yeah, there definitely has been talk about a film adaptation, which we're super excited about. And we may even have an opportunity to keep a little bit of this within the HG community with some of the talent and directors. So we're really excited about that. In terms of casting, it's such a hard question because we don't, we know what our characters look like in our minds, but they're not usually like necessarily actors or necessarily it might be an actor, but like they're not even really the right age. It's just like the feel that that person gives us is the right vibe.
Yes, like, we also are, I'm just not up and up with who is the great acting community of that age. I just have no idea. I know.
I probably would end up casting them too, way too old.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah. Zac Efron? Is he okay? Too old? Yeah, that would be me.
Well, I would love to see that as a movie, so that would be very exciting. Well, I know we touched on your reading lives a little bit, but I always love to hear if there are any books that guests have really loved lately that they'd like to recommend. Are there any you want to share?
I'm reading Fake Accounts right now by Lauren Euler, and it's really good. I'm not done with it, but it's great. I believe she co-wrote Alyssa Mastromonaco's book.
Oh, she did?
Yes.
I love that book.
That's why I decided to read Fake Accounts. I saw that she'd written this and she's a great writer. So that was my big one. What else, Jess?
I have two. So sometimes when I'm in the middle of some stuff and I don't let myself read because then I just won't get anything done that I have to get done in life. If I'm reading a book, that's all I want to do. So my two on the docket that I'm like, oh my gosh, I get to start this weekend are, what are they? Oh, I have the Ton of French book that I'm so excited to finally
read. Does she have a new, she has a new
it's
book
It's like
out?
The big hardback that's out right now. The Searcher.
Oh, okay. Yes. I can't wait to read that.
Okay. And then I also realized in pandemic that Emily Giffen put out a contemporary fiction that I want to read as well. So,
I haven't seen that one.
What are you reading? I didn't know any of these books were out.
I know. I was like, wait a second. These are all my favorite authors and they have books out? How did I not know this?
Oh, I'm looking this up. Is it and then, The Lies yes. That Bind? Is that
yes.
it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I missed that one. You're right.
When
that
did
came
that
out during
out?
COVID.
You know why?
June 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were busy. Mm-hmm.
We were busy.
Yeah. But then I just listened to an audiobook too when I on a road trip that was great. Seth Rogen's book I thought was fantastic.
Oh, I keep seeing that. You like that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really great.
I feel like that's the kind of book too where it's really nice to listen on audio. Like you just want to hear
yes,
his voice.
The best yeah. kind of books for yes. that.
Yes. Oh, love that. Well, just lastly, I have a few just sort of like favorite bookish type questions. Do you each have a favorite bookstore that you would recommend?
I love Politics and Prose in Washington, D.C. I'm actually going there tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
And in L.A., kind of home base as far as bookstores go is Chevalier's, which is a great independent bookstore. On this little street called Larchmont, which is just like this very charming little neighborhood. And they're great too, because we've gotten to do our last two book launches with them. And they're just like a super supportive and fun kind of place.
Oh, that's great. Those are both on my list. I've got to do like a cross country
tour.
Tour, yeah. Well, and actually kind of related to that, do you have a favorite literary destination, like a certain museum or author's house or just any place or like a setting of a particular book that you like?
I feel like I went a few years ago to Atlanta and I saw like where Margaret Mitchell lived and wrote Gone with the Wind, and I felt like that was a really fun little tour into Gone with the Wind.
It's Jessica's favorite movie.
It's my favorite book. One of my favorite books and movies.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was kind of like the mecca for that. But it was just interesting to see like kind of the story behind books like that and where she wrote and you know. We always kind of picture authors working at these like expansive spaces and it's like these little tiny rooms where they, you know, typed out 1,000-page novels. It's kind of amazing.
And we went to Catalina Island for a research writing trip. And I think that is my new favorite. It was so incredible.
Yeah. So our book takes place mostly in Catalina, and we decided, yeah, we should take a little research trip there. And it was the best decision we could have made. We were obsessed with it. I think that comes through in the pages of the book. Everyone tells us,
yes,
we want to go to Catalina.
Yeah.
Yeah, that setting really comes to life. I would have thought, yeah, just from reading it, I was like, oh, they must be regulars there or summer there or something. But, oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. We really immersed. Yeah. We immersed ourselves in that place. We just loved it so much.
But it is great because, like, in as we say in the book, there isn't really Wi-Fi and there isn't really great cell phone service. So, and there aren't cars. So it really does force you to just totally disconnect. Which is great just for any vacation, but especially for a writer's retreat, it was super helpful for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very cool. Do you have a book that you sort of turn to again and again for comfort, or just one that you have reread a lot?
I feel like I don't reread books that often. Yeah. Do you, Liz?
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, Bird by Bird, I've read a couple times, usually when I'm writing. But for comfort,
I feel like have you read and reread Untamed also?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I love Untamed.
Untamed. Yes, you're exactly right. I don't know if I would say I get comfort, but
maybe inspiration.
Yes.
It's funny you say that. I was just Googling before we got on. Does Glennon Doyle have another book coming out soon? It does not say. What
have
is
you been
next?
Listening to her podcast?
Yes, I love her podcast.
Me too. I love it.
She's just great. I enjoy her so much. She's a dream guest, so I'll put that out into the universe. Like,
yes,
maybe someday.
We support that. We support universe.
We'll be listening hardcore for that one.
I feel like I quote her daily. Or just say something that she says to myself. She's just, there's something about her. She's great.
I feel like she is definitely, now sort of inspiring and like in the heads of a whole like generation of women. I feel like I've handed the book to so many people.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, this was amazing. Yes. That's another one that was great on audio. I loved that as an audio.
Yes, me too. Me too. I didn't hop on the what's her name? Brene Brown.
Oh, Brene Brown. Yeah.
I feel like, was she the predecessor?
Maybe. I've watched a couple of Brene Brown's things. I have not read the books. I probably should, but that's been on my list for a while.
I know. Me too. I always feel like I should pick one up because people seem to really be inspired by her as well.
Yeah. Well, lastly, just do you each have a favorite library that you really like visiting?
A favorite library. So it's actually funny. I mean, one library that is so amazing and we get to visit it because it's actually where we went to school. And I was just thinking about this the other day. It's like the most quintessential gorgeous library. It's Doheny Library, right, Liz?
Yes. Oh, that's what I was going to say, but I live here now. So,
right,
I can't,
so you don't
I
get to
visit
it. So Doheny Library is at the University of Southern California where we went to school. And it's like if you were like doing a location scout for a movie and you wanted the most picturesque library, and I know it's been in a million movies too. This is
but in a dark way.
In a dark,
like one the exactly the library you want to be in at all times. Nothing will ever compare to it. That's why I know
there's
it was
like
in
lots
college,
of like
but
dark corners and it's super moody. And so, since I do still live in LA, and you know, we'll go back to school for game days or whatever, we get to pop in from time to time. And it's just a super special place.
Are you able to share what you're working on next, or is that still under wraps?
So before we sold Fade Into the Bright, we were working on a sequel to our last book, The Lost Causes, and we kind of put it on hold when we sold Fade Into the Bright. So we're starting to kind of get back into that world too, but we also have an idea for, you know, maybe even an adult book on the horizon. We love YA and love writing YA, but we have this one idea that we might want to explore as well. So, and then hopefully, like we said, you'll be seeing Fade Into the Bright adapted at some point soon as well.
Wonderful. Well, I We'll really look forward to reading the next book and cross my fingers for an adaptation. And I hope that listeners go pick up Fade Into the Bright. It is a wonderful read and will spark just, yeah, really interesting conversations and soul searching, but also, you know, has that wonderful love story. And I just think people will really enjoy it. And just thank you both for coming on and chatting with me. I really enjoy getting to speak with you.
Oh, us too. Thank you so much.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.